Hey, welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm David Gustina. Having lost a bet, I'm now hosting the program today for Joe Donahue. Our Ray Graff is away, so you get me. And after having been on the air now since 5 a.m., lucky you, we'll be joined by some much more important people. A distinguished panel, in fact, to talk about all the various news of the day, including last night's second Democratic presidential debate. We start with our own, Alan Chartok, the Grand Poobah. Good morning, Alan.
Hey, Gussie, you don't get up at 5 a.m. You get up at 2 a.m.
2:30, yeah, well.
So 5 a.m. is when you do your first stuff, but you really are amazing.
Well, that's too kind of you to say. Hang on while I amazingly fix Kalen's headphones, because she came unplugged. But let's face it, we've been doing this a long time, Alan. It's almost like we're married, too.
Yeah.
Let's leave it at that.
All right. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, not at all. That voice, by the way, thank you for stepping in, Ira, at just the right time, is Ira Fussfeld, fresh off the Media Project with Alan, and of course, Kalen Brown is with us too. Ira, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, Kalen Brown, the head of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose. Welcome to both of you, a spirited Media Project just undone.
Good
yes.
morning. Nice
yes.
to see you on this side of the microphone.
Well, it's been a while, a yeah. long time since I had to host this program, and there's a reason for that. Now to Terry Gibson.
I'm here.
New York State Senator, SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor. I warned you, Terry, before you came in here today, what was going to happen.
Do you really get up at 2 o'clock in the morning?
2:25. Alan's
wow.
very exaggerated a little. 2:25, but that's wow. very... That means I go to bed at 7 o'clock at night, so...
And you're still
me
sharp
too.
Right now. That's impressive.
Look at both Alan and I are sharp. Well, we know where the coffee is.
I get up at 2:25, but not for the same reason that you do.
No, that's at 10:30 for me, Ira. Right? Kalen, what time you get up?
3:30 is typical.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We're
yeah.
early birds, us
yeah.
news
there's,
folks.
There's
yeah, I got up at
do.
5:15, so you know.
All right, Terry, you're,
yeah,
you need
I know,
to,
I'm sleeping
you need
in.
To get working on
yeah,
that, right?
I tell
you. Well, let's move on from that and remind our listeners who are out there waiting for us to get started with some serious discussion that you can join us by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. Keep your letters short, to the point, and on topic. Don't include links or attachments. Don't use abbreviations and proofread your emails before you send. We'll fix them otherwise. Typos will disqualify your letter from being read. Don't send more than one email per day and on and on and on. Try to be nice if you can. We don't mind criticism, but be constructive. Well, why don't we start with, well, also, we want to let you know that's wamc.org/roundtable for all of that. Now, let's start with last night's second round of presidential debates. Alan, let's do a round robin. We'll start with you, your general impressions.
Well, I was disgusted, be honest with you. I think that the Democrats, once again, are forming a circular firing squad. I'm disgusted with the fact that instead of being helpful, and I saw some of that the night before with Bernie and Elizabeth, and you know, I just think this was awful. And you know, you're not hearing much from Trump. He's sitting back there and saying, "Let them destroy themselves," and destroy themselves they are.
Terry Gibson.
Well, I was trying to watch it from the point of view of who is the person here that I think can stand toe-to-toe to Donald Trump on a debate stage. And that's what I was really looking for. And I felt,
what'd you come up with?
I felt reasonably comfortable that they all had potential to do that except for Joe Biden. I just felt like time and time again, he would be in real trouble if he was standing beside Donald Trump. He just doesn't seem to have that ability to fight back in a way that you would need to with a character like Trump. And that concerns me. And I don't know who's trying to – I don't know if you can train someone as seasoned as Joe Biden to debate. He's been in the business for so long. But it just struck me as odd that he never would – you know, anytime his time was up, it was always just, okay, thanks, sorry, okay, never mind, stop.
Now,
he never talked
may,
through it like everyone else did. He couldn't complete a thought.
Now, you may be right. You may be right. I mean, I have my moments of disappointment. However, you know, Biden is a popular man in America. All of the polls show it, and have up to now anyway. And all of the polls say he's the only guy who's going to beat Trump. So what is it that people like about Biden? They like that he's not, you know, the sort of self-projecting, promoting guy that the others are.
Kalen Brown.
I, like the night before, I thought Elizabeth Warren is capable of defeating Trump on a debate platform. She is articulate. She is a policy wonk. She's been training for debates since she was in high school. Thanks to a New York Times story about Elizabeth Warren, we learned a lot about her strategy. I think she has an opportunity to do very well. Some of the individuals last night, Kamala was not on her game, according to most of the critics, but she's still a very strong candidate, I think. Perhaps Booker, soon to tell.
Ira.
Well, full disclosure, I hate these debates. I won't watch them. I watched last night's because I knew I'd be here this morning and we'd be talking about it. The night before, I felt I was informed enough about these debates by watching the clips and reading the New York Times. Everything that I feared about last night's debate came true. You start with these introduction of the participants like it's the beginning of a football game. You've got the national anthem, and then you've got the crowd in the audience. And I can't tell you if you've listened to this program and paid any attention to me over the years. I hate the fact that these debates have audiences. You saw twice at least where the program was interrupted because of protesters in the audience. Mm. If I was running a debate, the only people in the room would be, other than the cameramen, would be the debaters and the moderators. The rest is distracting. I think CNN set this thing up as a reality show. They asked questions that would create conflict. I just didn't feel that it was. And as Alan points out, the way it's set up is such that the fights that emerge between the Democratic candidates are only going to accrue to the benefit of Donald Trump down the road. And one of the people in the post game last night said that the Republican advertising people are already eagerly clipping up that debate because they've got a lot of fodder that's going to be used against these Democrats. So, but if you're asking me, do I think anybody emerged favorably? I thought that the one person who I liked was Cory Booker. I liked Harris coming in. I didn't think she had a good night.
Well, you can join our discussion, too, by emailing us at panel@wamc.org. I'm David Gustina, filling in for Joe Donahue today. We have Alan Chartok with us, Terry Gibson, Ira Fussfeld, who you just heard, and Kalen Brown. Well, the question I asked Alan this morning, which, you know, I think plays heavily in all of this when we get down the road closer to the election, is how many of the American people are actually paying attention to these debates?
Yeah, I wonder the same thing. I'd love to see some statistics on this because it is possible, especially with Joe Biden, who has such huge name recognition, that he can go a long, long, long way regardless of what he says or doesn't say in these debates. And he may be better off just saying less and writing that name recognition for as much as he can.
You know, I have a question for the group. We know Trump is a liar. That's been established. Almost even the people who like Trump would probably agree he's a liar. But you watch a debate like last night's, and you have at least several times where one of the candidates would say, "This is what I say about this, about your health plan. This is what you said." And the person comes back and says, "No, that's not what I said. You said this." Where somebody is not telling the truth. Is it a new nuanced thing? Is I think when Harris says, "Biden, your health plan would do this," and Biden says, "No, my health plan wouldn't do this, and by the way, your plan does this," where's the truth? And how is the public watching this and judging these candidates supposed to determine who's telling a truth and who's not?
And then the fact checkers get involved from organizations like the Washington Post and the New York Times.
That's the next morning or the day or so later, but you're watching in real time. It's just, who are you supposed to believe? How do you know who to believe?
Right, so when you talk about a lack of audience or mm-hmm. not as many people as we would expect, part of that's such an investment for mm-hmm. an audience member to spend 2 hours watching, listening, and then going the next day to check to see if what they heard is true. That's a high expectation for an audience mm-hmm. member. But that's what's expected, that the electorate will educate itself.
If CNN does with these candidates what it has come to do, what all of them now seem to be doing with Trump, which is when Trump makes a statement in a speech, they run a chyron on the bottom of the screen saying, "Trump says this, but that's not true." Is that what we need to have on the debates? Or would the CNN in this case be seen as favoring one candidate over the other?
Well, certainly they will, right, Ira? I mean, compared to Fox, which may be running a chyron in the other direction.
No, but I'm saying if Kamala Harris said tomorrow is Saturday, and Joe Biden comes back and say, wait, no, tomorrow's not Saturday, tomorrow's Thursday, should CNN on the bottom say, Kamala Harris says tomorrow is Saturday, but that's not true, it's Thursday? Or should they just let it go, and then people are going to say, well, what day is it tomorrow?
I felt like the healthcare portion of the debate was probably the most frustrating part for me. I feel like any time any of the candidates started going into great detail about their specific plans, they started losing the debate because they immediately left themselves open for someone to attack them on a specific piece of their program. And I thought the candidates that actually did better on healthcare were the ones that just acknowledged that it needs to change, acknowledged that we have a problem, and showed that they were willing to keep an open mind about how to go about solving that problem. Mm-hmm. And they didn't allow themselves to get caught up into specifics.
But none of you think that there was a clear winner last night, right? I mean, none of you thought that. I mean, I did hear somebody say,
I thought Booker was the clear winner.
Yeah. I don't agree with that, but that's okay. So that different people will feel differently about, you know, who came out one, but somebody's got to win this stuff because somebody's going to be the candidate.
Well, let me ask the political scientist and the former state senator: is this the way that our politics should be run? Does this debate help the process, or is there another way? Maybe there's just simply no other way. This is a bad way, but it's the best way we have.
To which I say, should Schmud?
Well, I'm asking you, what would you do?
Well,
if you...
I'm not king. I'm not emperor. I don't say this is the way to do it. In the old days, Ira, as you well know, there were people in the back room with the smoke. Farley and the other guys who said this is the best thing for the party. This is the guy who wins. This is the guy. But then enter corruption. So, you put your money down and it takes your choice.
Well, I am asking you to be king. You've got a chance to make a decision. Would you stick with this format or would you come up with something else?
I got to think about that, but I'll be honest with you. I think the best way to do it is to let me make the choice.
Well, let's think about the way we do it at WAMC. We do in-depth interviews with the candidates. Yeah. We get them on the air for a half an hour, for an hour, and we talk to them in depth about the issues. Then you can take all that sound and you can do a larger piece to compare and contrast what's going on and what's truthful and what's not. But the truth is we don't have really in-depth discussions, and television is very difficult, commercial television and radio, to get those done.
And David, when you got 24 people or whatever it is,
yeah,
you know, up there, it's very tough. Frankly, I thought that the CNN people did a good job. I thought they did a better job the night before, but they did a good job. They try to figure out, you know, what it is that is between these people and what it is that makes them different.
I think you need both. I think you need the in-depth interviews that you referred to. That's obviously very important. But I think it's very helpful to see these individuals stand side by side on a stage and compare themselves with each other. I think that's something the American public needs to see. And I do think today that the society we live in where media and entertainment are just overlapped, I think it's unavoidable. I think the society demands that we do this.
I agree with that, and that's why I believe it's a reality show that we saw last night. And somebody like Michael Bennett, the senator from Colorado, was very thoughtful. But boy, it was hard enough for me to stay awake that late without him starting to get on the air. He's just a snoozer, and many people are going to judge him on that as opposed to what he said.
But I agree with you, Ira, about the part that this is staged so much as entertainment. There's a way, I think, to have these candidates get up there and talk about the important issues without having them come out, like you described, I think, as a football introduction at the stadium on a Sunday. When I saw that happen and I was watching that with my adult children, I was mortified. I literally was nauseous that this was the way our presidential candidates were being presented to the country. This is not about entertainment. This is serious business about important policies. They're going to affect the lives of people.
Okay, so what do you got? So what do you got? In other words, you don't like it. What do you got? Give us an alternative.
I think the media could do a better job of presenting the candidates, and they could choose not to deliver it as some sort of an entertainment celebratory event. It's an informational, educational experience to watch a debate. What's wrong with that? That doesn't have to be boring. It can be interesting. How do we engage people to care about the issues? Or as Christina says, pay attention.
I don't know. You know, you get Gillibrand yesterday, Senator Gillibrand, and she has a prepared line, and the line is, I'm going to use Clorox. I'm going to use Clorox in the Oval Office.
But that says a lot, doesn't it, Alan?
Wait, but I'm going to tell you, what's interesting is the newspapers all grab it. They grab it, they run with it, and they do it. So it isn't as if the newspapers or the media does a proper analytical job, as you professor, I say that somewhat derisively, would want them to. You know, they're all in the same business.
Well, wait a minute. All, she said it at the debate, and the newspapers reported it. And they can't ignore it, but she said it at the debate because she knew that she was on television and she'd get a great snippet of tape about her doing this.
Exactly.
And she knew there would be an audience that would cheer her.
Exactly.
And so the print reporter is going to report what happened.
I agree with you. I'm just simply reacting to the concept that the media, which is being posed here, I believe, as an intellectual force, is no more uncorrupted by all of this than the CNN and MSNBC and everybody else.
Well, I don't agree with if the New
York
Times. Let me use my own experience, and I don't remember if Terry was, for I was already out of the game by then. But when we had editorial board meetings with the candidates, unless it was impossible to schedule them separately, we always wanted both candidates in the same room at the same time. This was prior to the internet and prior to us showing video of the event. And I would always start by saying, listen, you're not on TV. There's no audience here. Let's cut the crap and just talk about the issues. I found we had a much more substantive time when we did that. We also were able to have them go, if one claimed something else, it wasn't up to us, the reporters, to say, no, that's not what the other guy says. Let him or her say that for herself.
So no grandstanding.
No grandstanding.
Well, wait. See, I love the idea that I know that this is not a popular position, but I think it's very important to have had an audience in the room. I love the idea that when somebody said something that was incredibly bad, there was silence, and when somebody said something to that group, there would be cheers. I think that that's a good way of knowing what the American people want.
I think it's hard too for candidates who are really trying their best to appeal to human beings, to appeal to people. It's hard for them to stand in an empty room that has no people watching them, giving them any kind of feedback. I mean, these are individuals that rely heavily on feedback from individuals to know whether or not they're actually making any headway.
Speaking of feedback, hang on, Alan. We're running out of time here. Panel at WAMC.org. We need your letters. We want to hear what you're thinking about what they're saying. Somebody must care. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll head over for a little BBC, and then we'll be back. You're listening to The Roundtable right here on WAMC. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. A little Lionel Hampton from our engineer Mike, and that's Central Avenue Breakdown. How about
sounds
that?
Sounds like
we're
at a roadhouse.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're moving, and we got letters. Let's remind everyone you're listening to the Roundtable panel. I'm David Gustina, filling in for Joe Donahue today. We have our Alan Chartok with us. We have Terry Gibson, SUNY New Paltz communications professor and former New York State senator. You heard Ira Fussfeld, the Daily Freeman publisher emeritus, and of course Kalen Brown, the chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose, associate professor, all-around wonderful human being, as a matter of fact. And thank you all for being here.
That makes one of us.
You should have heard them, Alan, in between, talking about, you know.
Me.
No. No, actually.
That's the next break.
That was going to be next. But they were talking about Joe Biden and sort of the nonverbal communication. We got into a little discussion on that and why perhaps he doesn't do so well in these debates. Anybody want to bring that up?
Well, I think we were just talking about he tended to end all of his comments by looking down, almost like a dog was sort of being told to sort of be quiet, stay still, don't say anything. He just always felt sort of beaten. I don't think he's ever been a great debater personally. I don't know that that's a requirement to be president, but I just think he was ultimately very weak on stage and had a really difficult time expressing himself clearly.
Yeah, well, he monitored himself several times. He would end a thought when he felt he was going on too long by saying, well, anyway, and then that would end his piece. He also stopped short of the allotted time several times, whereas the others were not afraid to just go blast by their time, annoyingly so, by the way. And I have one other point. Alan, I'm sure, will agree with this because he and Biden,
no,
I believe, are the same age. His age is a factor. It doesn't mean everybody who's his age is not capable, but boy, I did not feel comfortable watching him trying to get his words out last night.
Okay, look, I agree with that. However, I am going to point a couple of things out. Number one, not only is he the leader in this group, not only is he the leader, but up until now his lead has been not diminishing, but growing. So I would advance to all of you, there may be something about his character, his persona, that the American people like, which is that he is not bombastic like Trump, that he is a guy who is considered and who could be presidential. After all, he was vice presidential. So I know everybody's counting him out today and saying, well, you know, he wasn't very good. And I have to agree with it. He wasn't great in terms of what he was doing. And yet there is something in this guy that people like. And you can't argue with that.
No, I agree with that 100%, and I'm right at the head of the pack on him. I hope he emerges, because I think he's the guy who is most likely to beat Trump. But the more you watch him, the more, at least I get nervous watching him. I'm just a little concerned about the negatives, and do they overshadow all of those positives that you just listed?
I hate to share this with you, Ira, but I agree with you.
Oh man,
this is something's happened here. Kaylin, any thoughts?
Joe Biden could stand to have some more handling, I think. But in the meantime, I think there are other candidates who are emerging as better prepared for debates and are willing to fight against the status quo, which for me is what Biden represents.
You know,
I'd like to see Warren debating Biden. I'd like to see Bernie Sanders debating Biden, even though Bernie Sanders is not where I'm leaning. I think that he made some good arguments, and I would love to see him against Trump. I think Warren has a good chance against Trump. I think Gillibrand and her comment about Clorox is very interesting in light of the whole infestation conversation in the past week or so. To me, that Clorox reference refers to what has happened in the White House, and that she herself sees that there has been a problem that is bordering on infestation in the White House, and the way to clear that up and get rid of the germs is with Clorox.
You know, I mean, it was a prepared statement that was going to get applause, but it doesn't show substance. It just doesn't. And the American people know it, which is why up until now she's been at zero in her share of the potential primary voters.
What about her comment about Biden having referenced the woman should stay in the home?
Yeah, well, I thought you know, one of the things about being old like I am, or old like he is that you have a history, and you said things that might have gone over well in the day, and don't remember that there are people to this day who think, and there were a lot of white suburban women, by the way, who voted for Trump, and his message was similar, so that it is not unknown. It is change, and it should have changed. It's terrible, but the fact is, that's where we are. You know, 40 years ago was different than now.
This is my concern about Joe Biden, is that I do think that he has the potential to be very appealing in the general election, especially in those very important swing states for the Electoral College. But he has to win a primary, and I'm just concerned that he comes from a time long gone by, and he has an enormous amount of baggage from his voting record from those times. And I just don't know how it's going to unify the Democratic Party enough to elect him in the primary. And I am concerned about that.
I'm hoping that somebody, and I can't imagine that won't be the case, somebody is going to pull up that article that she referred to, because I'd like to see the context of that. Even if it was 30 or 35 years old, it's hard for me to believe that he meant what she was suggesting he meant. So,
well, he said he didn't.
Well, that's right. So I think we need to see it. And at the risk of contradicting myself, you know, Kalen was talking about how good or not good someone is in a debate. And the question I have, is that the way we want to judge our president? I mean, is, you know, I'll go out on the street and find the greatest orator in the world. I wouldn't elect him or her president. So
yep.
Some of them are simply just not that good at debating. And I wouldn't want to automatically disqualify them if, in fact, they were the best candidate otherwise.
Well, unfortunately, the listeners aren't happy.
Ah.
We've got letters, and I'll start with this subject. I'm sick. This is from Lisa Polquag. What happened over the last two nights of debating, infighting, cannibalization, attacking President Obama? Do we want four more years of Trump? I don't. I want my excellent union-provided health care along with an option for others less fortunate. Most of these candidates are unqualified to be president. Others should go back home and run for the Senate so it's Democratic in 2020, as there is more than one race happening here. I thought the object of these debates was to get your ideas out and defeat Trump, not beat each other up.
I have a comment on that letter. God bless Lisa. She's exactly right. Yeah.
The people, them criticizing Trump, rather Obama, was just incredible. How could an extremely popular president, someone who did more to bring this country together, I would argue, and they're now tearing him down? Incredible.
Well, you know what it's about? It's about selfishness. Somehow these guys decided that they could be president of the United States. I say guys, meaning women, too. That they could be president of the United States, and they don't give a damn what's good for the party or the country. They just want to be president, and they're going to do anything they can to get there.
Not right about Biden. Uh-oh. Allen, spelled wrong, is flat out wrong on Biden. A-L-L-E-N. Sorry about that, Allen. He said all
Well, it shows you that he doesn't know what he's talking about if it's A-L-L-E-N.
He said, we're sorry,
Cameron.
Don't
you know there's two A's? beginning.
We're sorry, Cameron, about that. He said all the polls show that he's the only man that can beat Trump. The polls show the opposite and have Biden, Warren, Harris, and Sanders all besting Trump. Biden showed again last night that his time has passed. It means nothing to mix up a cell phone with a website in general, but when you add it to a lack of fight and passion, and he just feels over the hill.
Well, that could be right. However, I have to take some issue. I certainly saw the poll, which said, and it may have been a week ago, which said that Biden was the only one of the entire field right now who could beat Trump.
Yeah, but we know from the last presidential election that the polls are not reliable.
Well, wait a second. We know yes and no.
No, we talked about that.
No, we don't really know that.
But to the readers,
polls were accurate.
No, we don't really know that.
They didn't have the state by state, but they
That's
had the
right.
popular vote. Right?
They certainly did, Ira. You are 100% right.
You know, to the writer's point, though, when you can't even say your own website or say your own text platform or give your own cell number at the end of your closing comment of a national debate, there's a problem in your communication skills. And I thought the way that he flubbed that was really unfortunate.
We can't underestimate.
Well, you're the professor of communication, and I want to know who did the best. Who could be a presidential candidate from that group? Gillibrand, are you kidding? I mean, who was it? Was it Cory Booker?
Yes,
I don't
know.
There's your answer, Terry.
Look, I'll give you the two that I thought were the most prepared, the two that I thought handled themselves under pressure and never let that pressure get to them, were Cory Booker and Tulsi Gabbard. Those two to me stood out as being incredibly professional, really prepared, and always had a way to deal with whatever's thrown at them.
And I couldn't disagree more, especially
that's
about
why
Gabbard.
This makes for good radio.
Yeah, especially about Gabbard. Again, I think that she didn't care what was good for the party, what was good to defeat Trump. She just wanted to be a winner.
Wow, we're loving your letters today. And our panel, Alan Shartok, Terry Gibson, Ira Fussfeld, and Kalen Brown. I'm David Gustina, filling in for Joe Donahue. We'll take a bit of a break, and we'll be back with more of your letters. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. Lionel Hampton playing on our wonderful radio station, thanks to Mike Bowen. And we're here on the roundtable, and it's the panel. You can write to us, email us at panel@wamc.org. Keep those letters short, to the point, and on topic, and don't make grammatical mistakes.
No, and say something like, David, you can say something like, Lionel Hampton, dear panel, Lionel Hampton was a member of the legendary Benny Goodman Quartet.
Indeed.
Yours truly.
Yours truly.
That's what the music I grew up on. My father had the old 78s, and that's what I'd hear in my apartment all the time.
Yeah, and who else was in the Benny Goodman Quartet?
Well, you had Gene Krupa, no?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And one more. Who played the piano?
Gee, I don't remember.
Teddy Wilson.
Oh, Teddy Wilson.
Well, we're that sure, jazz fact from you,
we've got that demographic locked up on this station.
Yeah, we sure do.
Can I make a point that I made once before, and I it's just to give everybody a sense of angst. I remember being here in May, and I said, I think it was May 2nd, and I said, you know, it's May 2nd, and we're going to be sitting in this studio a year from today, and it'll be May 2nd, 2020, and we'll still be 6 months from this election. So we had, at that point, 18 months. We sit here this morning, we've still got 15 more months of this, and so the point I guess I'm trying to make is we're all going to be burned out, number one. Number two, no wonder people are not paying attention yet. And number three, I don't remember. That's from Gillibrand.
Time out.
That's the old political science thing. There are three reasons.
That's the guy, what's his name? Rick Perry.
And I forget.
We've all been there. Well, how about this letter we got, guys, from Mary Margaret, Kinderhook, New York. She writes in and she said, are we all that certain that there will be a presidential debate? Can't Trump just not bother?
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, that is a great letter, because that's my deep fear, is that this is not a normal election process. And the president has already shown that he'll do everything he can to make it not happen in a normal way. And why not just steal the election and skip all the debate stuff?
Well, we are getting a lot of mail. Now, I don't think this is realistic, but we're getting a lot of mail at WAMC saying that there won't be an election. This guy's going to take over. And there are people, here's what's so scary about that. There are an awful lot of people who truly believe that's the case, that this country is going fascist and that that's what this guy's going to do. And he's going to make up an excuse and say the election is rigged and therefore we're not going to have an election. I don't think the armed forces goes along with that, to be honest with you. I don't think that would happen. But he's got a lot of reasons to do it. And one of them, I don't think it's going to happen. But one of the reasons that you would do it is, you know, that if that your term is up, you're going to be indicted and probably convicted and maybe go to jail.
I think that he, depending on who the Democratic nominee is, I think he will believe that he can outdebate any of them. That he, you know, that his brand of lying and interrupting and name calling worked for him the last time and will work for him this time. Now, the only thing that might change his mind is if the Democratic nominee is just so formidable and that he knows that he will be wiped up on the floor by them, then he might try not to debate. But
With that, Ira, is who is that formidable person?
Yeah, we don't know yet. Nobody yet.
Well, it's not
maybe Elizabeth Warren based on those criteria.
Yes, yeah. I think that one of the reasons the president would choose to debate, even if it were his strongest opponent, he cannot resist the camera.
Yeah,
he cannot resist that. It's basically narcissism that will drive him to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
I have great problems with the Elizabeth Warren idea. I love Elizabeth Warren. I think she's terrific. She's my senator, and I have nothing but respect for her. But in terms of charisma, the ability to be, you know, to carry it, I don't think she's it, and I don't think the American people think she's it based on at least the polling up until now. I think Harris, on the other hand, has that ability. And I would expect, first of all, I think that there's going to be a woman on this ticket no matter what. And I'm pretty sure, as of now, it's going to be Harris.
Well, how about this letter from Sadie, who says, Joe Biden out of touch? Did Biden say to Kamala Harris, a senator and distinguished attorney general, and we spoke about this a little bit, hey, kid, upon entry. Yeah. Really? Kid?
What the
unintended chauvinism?
What the hell did he do that for?
That's Joe.
That is chauvinistic.
But
absolutely.
That's Joe.
And we were talking about this off air. I don't know whether he realized his comments at the beginning when they were greeting each other would be picked up by the microphones. But,
well, if he didn't, he should have.
Okay, I'll buy that. But you know, that's Joe. He's, how are you doing, kid? You know, I would do that to somebody. Does that mean I'm sexist? I guess under today's rules,
it doesn't show Harris the respect she is due, and she has earned the right to be called something other than kid.
Absolutely. You know, he has a way throughout his whole history of having interesting language choices. There were two last night. I don't know if anybody caught them, but they came very close together. He was talking about immigration, and he said that our country can tolerate more immigrants. He said that. He used the word tolerate. And then he was trying to say
that we do have room for more immigrants.
Yeah, but that's
tolerate
different than
is not
saying tolerate.
Yeah.
Right. And then he was talking about he was trying to defend President Obama's record, and he said President Obama found a way to he wanted to deal with the Dreamers. He found a way to deal with the Dreamers. I just thought these are choices that are not in the best interest of his campaign. And him saying kid to a senator is just another example.
Hmm. How about this one? Panel, this also on Biden. This is from Daniel. Daniel says, what does Biden stand for? No idea. Who is excited by him? Nobody. Does he have energy? No. Will he be able to mobilize the base and young people? No, we need a candidate who will light a fire and overwhelm Trump's base with the mobilization of their base. That's Liz or Bernie and maybe Harris, Buttigieg, Booker, or Castro.
Ain't going to happen. But here's, in my opinion, that's not going to happen. But here's what's interesting. Over 50% of the black vote is for Biden. Now that shows a level of confidence that he, as an able lieutenant for Obama, did a good job and would continue to do a good job. I'm fascinated by that. I really am.
What about the young people part of this? I mean, there are many young people who were not of voting age the last time around, and they are energized, you would think, to come out and vote for the first time. How much will that add into this?
I don't know about this. We had this discussion yesterday. And I have to say that as a long-term professor, 40 years in a classroom, you know, and my number one idea was exciting young people about voting and the potential that they had to make a difference. And David, you're a professor. Mm-hmm. Kaylin's a professor. I haven't seen it. I know that people say, we're going to do it. But in the end, they haven't done it. Now, if they do it, that'll make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. If the nominee of this party, regardless of who it is does not have the full-throated support of all of the other Democratic candidates, then Trump is going to win.
As happened with Bernie.
Right. If it's not a Bernie person, if it's not a woman, if it's not a black woman, if it's not a black man, and they do not support who ultimately is the nominee, Trump is going to get a pass, and that's where, to the question of whether it's millennials or old people like me, we have to remind ourselves we may not get the person as our nominee that we'd like, but we sure as hell don't want this guy back for another term.
Have we reached the tipping point, or will we reach a tipping point where the Trump administration goes so far that for those Democratic voters, it won't matter who the nominee is, they're going to go vote to get him out of the White House?
The polls say that.
Well, not really.
Well, he's got 40%.
You've got people. No, the 40% of the people approve of what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you come on a head-to-head with other candidates, the answer is no. It's not there. The New York Times, which I have great respect for in their analysis, says, you know, there's a very good chance that Trump is going to succeed himself.
Well, they correctly did an analysis reaching that conclusion based on the Electoral College, which
and
of course
I would say
is what
based on that debate last night, you know, it's a pretty good idea. We can't decide if anybody really jumped out of the pack last night, right? Biden disappointed many people. I don't see anybody emerging right now who can do this job.
Well, Alan, someone agrees with you They spelled your name right. I agree with Alan. This is Daisy. I'm no fan of Biden, but I think many felt he was beat up unfairly last night. He looked ugly. Optics were terrible, and I think people will sympathize with Uncle Joe. I'm waiting to see Warren on stage with him, talk about energy, and then we can see the real debate, not bullying.
If that's what we call beating up on Joe Biden, just wait and see what Donald Trump does to him. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, I think, was polite compared to what Donald Trump will do to him on a stage. And if he can't withstand attacks from his own party, just imagine what's in store for him. I think it's very important that he be tested on the stage like this, and I don't think he did well passing that test last night.
Let's remember Trump in his primary, when he ran for the first time, and the kinds of awful things that they said about him and that he said about them, and it's as if it never happened.
Well, I don't remember too many awful things that the others said about him.
Oh, they did. Terrible.
Yeah, I just think they were all afraid of him.
Yeah, they were afraid of him, and they wanted to win. So after he went after them and called them all kinds of names, they came back and they said things about him. It didn't matter.
To your question about what will Democrats do, Alan, I think that the party probably will unite. I think it's early to tell. When these candidates did their first round of debates, not this week, the ones earlier in the season, there was a unity that was being projected to the audiences. The party seemed together. It was almost as if they said, whatever we do, let's not attack each other. Now, it changed this week. So why did it change?
Because they're selfish.
Yes.
Because they're really selfish.
I agree with you.
Well, I'm going to be selfish. We've got to take a break. I'm really, really sorry.
Oh, no.
You're listening to the Roundtable Panel on WAMC. Email us at panel@wamc.org. I'm David Gustina here with Alan Chartok, Kalen Brown, Ira Fussfeld, and Terry Gibson. We got to get to some news, so we'll be back after that. Lionel Hampton, all right, on the round table. I'm David Gustina, filling in for Joe Donahue. Quite a panel we have today. Thanks for tuning in, and you can email us at panel@wamc.org. Keep things brief if you can. Our Alan Chartok with us, former New York State Senator, SUNY New Paltz Communication Professor. Terry Gibson is with us. Kalen Brown, the Associate Professor and Chair of Department of Communications at College of St. Rose, joins us today, along with our old and good friend Ira Fussfeld, Professor, Publisher Emeritus at the Daily Freeman. Often sounds professorial, too, don't you?
Yes, last but least. Well, I still haven't thought of number three yet.
How about this? Stop it, Ira. How about this letter from John? Panel, debate. How about two changes that help remove media bias? Give every candidate the same number of direct questions. Let each candidate submit three questions for each opponent from which the moderators can choose.
It sounds logical to me, but it's entertainment. It's show business. I mean, these cable networks have to make money and sell advertising, and they have to make a show of it. So I'm not sure that makes for good television.
But I like the listener's idea of trying to sort of democratize the process. I think that's a great idea. I think that they should mix up the way they're doing it now. Give audiences another way to choose instead of just this single platform.
Ira?
As they say on radio, you can be part of the conversation. I don't know. I don't know that I have a better idea. I just know I don't like the current format. I just don't think it is helpful for the process. And, as soon as I find out a better way, you'll be here for me. But I something has got to do to improve it. We need to do a better job of electing our public officials, particularly our president. I tell you one thing I would do is I would shorten the process. As I said before, we've got 18 months. When I first commented on it, we've got 15 months now. We're going to be here a year from now. It'll be only still another 3 months. It's going to, we're all going to be worn out. We're all going to be mainly happy that the process has ended, not that we've elected a qualified person. So, but I wish I had a better idea because I'd market it.
Debating is it's not a requirement, to be a candidate.
Right.
A letter before, yeah. There's nothing to say that Trump will even show up for a debate. I mean, there's a long history in across the country of candidates just not showing up for debates, and they still get elected over and over again. So
including former Governor George Pataki. Yeah.
Well, before that, somewhere in Albany is a life-size cutout of Andy O'Rourke. Isn't that the guy who wouldn't debate Cuomo? Or is it vice versa? I don't remember now.
Well, Alan has a cartoon in his office that's, outlaw, forgive this term, but dwarf tossing. It's a cartoon because Pataki didn't show up to that debate, and Cuomo was forced to debate all the minor party candidates.
Yeah. Well, we all remember when Cuomo was so far ahead that his opponent couldn't get a debate with him.
Yeah.
So one day Cuomo was on the radio, not with us, with somebody else, and O'Rourke called up and said, "God," and then said cursed, and he didn't curse. He said, "Damn it!" And Mario, why don't you debate? And Mario said, "I was going to debate, but I'm not anymore because you took the Lord's name in vain." I mean,
not that he'd never done that.
It was a riot. It was a riot. I wasn't happy with that debate. I think they destroyed themselves. The Democrats destroyed themselves last night. I think it was just ugly. And I had a pretty good idea of what was happening. I see that the Republicans are very quiet during this time because they're delighted that the Democrats are destroying each other. When we got off the air, I said it's a matter of selfishness, and it is. These people want to be president. They want their shot, and they don't care.
Did you feel the same way after the first debate? I didn't, as I said, I didn't see the first one. Did you come away from that one the same as last night's?
Well, no, I thought last night's was worse.
Yeah.
I did. I thought the night before you had some interesting substantive differences. But last night was just total chaos. It was awful. I hated it. And I thought the Democrats who were on that stage were responsible for it. They were responsible for it.
What do you think? What do you think De Blasio's goal is here? He must know he has no chance. He's not. He needs a job because he's term limited in New York City. But do you believe that he fits in as a vice presidential candidate or as a cabinet member?
Absolutely not.
No, nor do I. So I don't know.
They
what
don't,
his
right, Ira? They don't need New York. They don't need New York.
Well,
they
that's one
New
reason.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And De Blasio is not happy. The people of New York City are not happy with De Blasio. That's clear. And he had nothing else to do. He did it. Nature abhors a vacuum. There was a vacuum. He said, I'm going into it. I think, frankly, the two who really make no sense to me are Gillibrand and De Blasio.
But I could see Gillibrand having an ulterior motive of she might see a vice presidential nomination. She might see a cabinet post. She might be she's a young woman. She might be investing in the next time around by getting her name recognition now.
That's interesting because the way that Gillibrand became the senator is that she was supported by Schumer, who certainly didn't want his light outshone by anybody else. So they put Gillibrand in and by D'Amato, of all people, who, even though he was a Republican. But when she got nominated, the two of them was Schumer and D'Amato were standing next to her and putting her in there. If I'm Joe Biden and if I'm the candidate or whoever the candidate's going to be and you know there's going to be a woman, I think so far Harris has distinguished herself.
Well, the writer from Greenfield, Massachusetts, Russ, says, "You're wasting our time critiquing the debate structure. It's TV on CNN, so it has to entertain. If the broadcast networks had aired it, I believe that it would have been different. Maybe not better, but different at least. I'd rather hear you speak of what they said and what you thought about it. Forget about Trump for now and just focus on these candidates as if they're running only against themselves." And let me just throw this in from the Boston Globe. There are 25 Democrats running for president, but only about 10 expected to meet the party's requirements for the next debate in September. By August 28th, candidates will need to show they have at least 130,000 donors and reach 2% in at least four polls the Democratic National Committee has deemed credible. Two candidates on the stage, former Housing Secretary Julian Castro and New York entrepreneur Andrew Yang, are on the bubble. Both have met the donor thresholds and are on their way to hitting the poll thresholds, but have yet to do so. Yang, for example, needs just one more poll. But for the five others on the stage, it was, of course, a do-or-die moment. So what about this? I mean, we still have a winnowing down going on here.
That's right.
That's a good thing.
That's exactly right. That's what's happening. No two ways about it.
And as the herd is thinned, I do think that then the audience or the people who are choosing to vote will pay closer attention. We've talked about the fact people aren't paying as close attention, and Ira talked about how many months to go. I think that once the herd is thinned, we'll see more attention paid.
You know, I'm so old that I remember Mike Dukakis. Remember him, guys? Remember, he was going to win.
Yeah.
Head in the polls and all the rest. Then there came the tank. And
he drove an army tank.
If I remember Gene Krupa, how could I not remember Michael Dukakis?
Yeah.
You know, Yang said something interesting last night, and he was commenting, I think I heard this correctly, that after his last appearance, what did people comment about him was the fact that he didn't wear a tie. And then you had the night before last, I saw a story that Congressman Ryan was being criticized because during the national anthem, he didn't put his hand over his heart. I mean, this is the sort of stuff that has nothing to do whether this person or these people are qualified to be the president of the United States. But it's on TV, and this is what certain segments see. And Fox News will get a hold of either one of those and make light of it. The process is just scattershot. It's out of control. I wish I knew how to fix it, but all I know is it ain't good.
But is our perspective skewed? We're the insiders. We're here. We're talking about this every day. We're going through every single detail. Are the American people even going to start paying attention before it gets close?
Well, David, let's face it. Our audience is paying attention.
Sure.
Got a huge number of letters today.
But that's just a small sliver.
2% of the population.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I think you could argue that the qualifications for being president, the perspective we have on that is really off and abstract at this point in time. With Donald Trump as president, what are the qualifications to be president? I mean, how is the American public actually judging qualifications? Maybe it does come down to whether you wear a tie or not. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But with Donald Trump in the White House, what the American public is looking for in qualifications is a bit confusing at the moment.
You know, I'm so old. I always say that. I'm so old that I remember Harry Truman.
Well, Alan, we're having a little trouble hearing you.
Oh, I'm so old that I remember Harry Truman. You know, he was a guy who was not an orator, who was not supposed to win, but who did. And his inner qualities showed, of course, when it was him versus Eisenhower, you know, the hero of World War II, he was out of there. But the fact is that sometimes those inner qualities mean a great deal and surface.
If Trump loses this election, and if he loses by a considerable margin, it will probably put to bed for the foreseeable future the notion of a business person running for office versus a career politician, because he'll have screwed it up for the rest of them. I don't know that that's necessarily going to happen, but I do think it will happen if he is beaten badly, that there will be no room for the Andrew Yangs and the Williamsons and who else
Delaney
is in there?
Delaney.
Delaney was in Congress, because I think a lot of us, even those of us who will describe ourselves as moderates to liberals, were so disgusted with Washington that we said, I remember writing an editorial many years ago, wouldn't it be a good idea if we have a business person running the government because business people know how to get things done? Now, I don't know that I'd write that same editorial tomorrow. I certainly wouldn't write it using Trump as the example, because Trump is an example in part of why you don't want a business person to be there, not just because of who Trump is, but because a business person, a CEO, is used to doing it his or her way and not having to go through a board of directors and not having to go through a Congress to get permission. Their inclination is, okay, I'm going to do this, let's just do it. And that doesn't work. Well, it might work if it was somebody more intelligent and more reasonable than Trump is, but I don't see that happening again if Trump is beaten badly.
I don't think a business person would be precluded from running the country if they had integrity, Ira. The problem is the current business person has zero integrity.
Yeah.
Less than, even.
Well, we'll have to see how President
Bezos
goes.
All the politicians running for president have integrity? I mean, I think integrity is a big issue when it comes to politics in general. I mean, I think you could say the same.
Right, and that's why in part many of us were saying let's give somebody else a chance as opposed to the career politician.
Well, someone on who's written in wants somebody else to get a chance. That's Maureen. She says, "Dear panel, I was pleased to see so many competent politicians on the stage last night. Why dismiss Senator Bennett, though? He's articulate, thoughtful, and I think he's supported. His supposed lack of charisma is dismissed too readily. Julian Castro is solid, too. Look deeper into the field, I say."
I don't disagree with that, but the reality is that the public tends not to get behind someone who is a snoozer, and he was a snoozer.
Put another way, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
"Take all the flubs," says Kevin, "grandstanding one-liners, and throw them in the garbage. Biden is still standing come October. He will carve up Sanders, Warren, and Harris. The only candidate that is going to take back Ohio, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Florida is Biden. He is moderate, and that is, all caps, huge."
I would love to see Bernie Sanders on stage with Donald Trump. I think it would be quite dynamic and quite interesting, and I think that Sanders could hold his own, and I think many others could as well.
But Alan, let me ask you this. If Sanders were to get the nomination, let's say he did.
Sure.
Socialism, 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 socialism.
Sure. He's not getting the nomination.
What about the Republican attack?
First of all, he's not getting the nomination. And so, you know, if this happened, then this would, it's all very interesting. But I agree with the last letter writer. It is going to be Biden, in my opinion. And who he chooses as somebody made this point earlier, who he chooses as the vice presidential nominee is going to be very important. And that's why I think it's going to be Harris. It has to be a woman. I think it's going to be Harris. There are others who think it could be Klobuchar, somebody else. But I think Harris has that heft, that charisma that would make her a very good vice presidential as well as presidential candidate.
Yeah. It has to be somebody that can attack. It really does. That was Hillary's mistake, is that she had a VP candidate that would not attack. And she had to do the attacking herself.
Well, her mistake was being Hillary.
Yeah, that's true.
Who is that?
That was her strength. I disagree with that assessment.
I see.
Yes.
I see. That's why she won.
Well, she did in some circles.
No, she didn't. Not in this electoral college. Sorry.
I know. So what is your assessment of Amy Klobuchar, Alan? I think that Amy Klobuchar has performed admirably in
the
debates.
She has. I just mentioned her.
Yes. You know. What are your thoughts about her?
Well, I think she's very strong. I think she's very strong. They've already done a job on her, how she treats the staff and this and that. But I think she's a strong candidate and could well be a strategic candidate also.
And when you talk about the fact that a woman will be on the ticket, what leads you to that conclusion?
I think people would be women in America would be infuriated if they were not represented in this election. And I think there are many, many competent women. In fact, I think it's easy to say that either Klobuchar or Harris would be ideal presidential candidates. I think we're coming to the point where this democracy certainly should have a woman as a potential presidential candidate.
And with everything that Donald Trump has done when it comes to misogyny and sexism and his treatment of women, how much does that influence women coming out to vote?
I think Klobuchar is somebody to keep an eye on as this continues.
Yep. Yeah. Well,
let's all remember that when a president picks a vice presidential candidate, they do so in terms of strategy. Lyndon Johnson brought Texas to Kennedy. Kennedy would not have won without that. They're going to have to see what states are representative, what's in play. To me, that's all going to be the game.
We're running out of time quickly, but I want to sort of end with this. We'll wrap our arms around each other. Let's sing some Kumbaya. Wouldn't it be great, says Michael, and amazing if one of these candidates just turned to the others and said, "What are we doing here? Destroying each other? Stop it. Trump is loving it. Let's get together for a single purpose, and that's to remove this embarrassment from our White House." That person would be my choice.
Well, didn't Booker do some of that last night?
And I think Warren did a little bit of that, too, when she talked about health care the first night and said, no Democrat wants to get rid of your health care.
I saw some stories this morning referring to Booker as the happy warrior. And you remember Alan will remember the last happy warrior. I presume Hubert Humphrey.
I certainly will.
Yeah. And he didn't win the presidency either.
No, that's Al Smith.
No, I was thinking of Hubert Humphrey.
Oh, Hubert Humphrey, yeah.
Well, what do you think about that statement? Should the Democrats just come together right now and pick their nominee?
Well, I think that they are. Well, here, as a Democrat, I do have to say, I am actually very happy that this number of talented people have stepped forward to see what they can do in terms of being a candidate. I think it shows that we have an actually very deep bench in the Democratic Party, that we have a lot of talented people that have great ideas. There was a lot of imagination on stage last night, a lot of new ideas, and the night before that. So I'm optimistic that we are all going to come together and rally around the person once we get through the brutal primary process.
I wish I agreed. I wish I agreed with you. I don't. I don't think it's a strong group, and I think that they have shown that in these debates.
Kalen.
I'd like to see two women on the ticket.
Sure.
Ira?
No reason not to.
I'd like to see the race end. Be over.
Well,
and when Donald Trump going back to Mar-a-Lago in a one-way ticket.
The race has not ended, but the panel discussion has.
Oh, man.
Ira Fussfeld, Daily Freeman publisher, has been with us along with Kalen Brown, associate professor, chair of the Department of Communications at the College of St. Rose, former New York State Senator and current SUNY New Paltz communication professor Terry Gibson, and our own grand poobah, Alan Shartok. Spelled A-L-A-N. Don't forget that, by the way. Yeah. You've been listening to the Roundtable panel. I'm David Gustina. More Roundtable after this.
Thank you, David.